Moore out, swinging a ground ball, stabbed by Folk. He has it. He underhands to first, and the Boston Red Sox are the world champions. For the first time in 86 years, the Red Sox have won baseball's world championship.
Swinging a high deep drive into right field. That one scalded to right. Hunter on the move. Racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
Good day to everybody. Whether you're watching us right after the drop because you're a country club member, or if you're catching this later on down the road because you're not a country club member. Come on, you cheap bastard. Come out the hip. It's 9 cents a day. And how are you, Sergeant T, this morning? Excuse me.
Oh, I'm glad baseball's back.
Ish.
Yeah, ish.
Isn't it great? Sox are on a four-game losing streak. The Braves lost Strider for the year. Yeah, baseball's great. Can't wait.
Yeah. We lost Story for the year.
Yes, Story's gone. What the hell? Man, I saw that news and I was like, are you kidding me? Because he was having a pretty good spring.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God. This guy can't catch. Well, it's a bad pun to make, but he can't catch a break. I mean.
Yeah. Well, and you could hear it. Like, when I was watching the game and you could hear something, and then you hear him grunt, and like all the, like, Rafi puts his hands on his head like this. And I was like, well, that's not good. I mean,
yeah.
Scalded that ball, and he made a great effort. But the way he landed, the whole thing was bad. It was.
Now, the good news is, Vaughn Grissom started his rehab assignment Friday night, and he could easily slide over to second. I guess Rafi would be the shortstop, or what's the game plan you're hearing?
No, he could be, but they really, and for good reason, want to keep Rafi in center field because he's freaking his own web gems out there, man. He's made some spectacular plays. I think Hernandez or something like that. I don't know. They just brought Dahlbeck back.
Well, he ain't playing shortstop, I can tell you that right now.
No. So, but he'll probably play first base and they'll slide somebody. I don't know, man. I've heard they were considering Rafi, but I don't think Cora wants him anywhere but in center field, because why would you? You know, he's. And.
Well, right now your top option is going to be Pablo Reyes if you don't put Rafi out there. Me?
Yeah.
Me personally, I'm putting Rafi there because I want his bat in the lineup, and I'm pretty deep at outfield. You can put Duran back in center. You can have Tyler O'Neill out there in the outfield, or DH, obviously. Same thing with Yoshida. But you got more guys who can hit that can play center field than you do that can play shortstop. So that's and by the way, for any Red Sox fan who's not familiar with his career, Vaughn Grissom is not an option. He is not a shortstop. I saw a write-up by a Red Sox writer early this week, and they were insinuating that he was getting work at second base, even though how did they put it there, that his natural home is shortstop. That's not true. It's the exact opposite. It's why he's not in Atlanta anymore. He was a second baseman that they were trying to pigeonhole over to short when Dansby Swanson left to go to Chicago. And he can't play the position. He just simply can't. It's not his position. You would think someone that can play second could play short. But if you didn't grow up playing that position, Grissom grew up playing second base. Well, there's a problem at second base in Atlanta. His name's Ozzie Albies. He's not going anywhere. So that's why you were either going to have to So they tried putting him at short. That didn't work out. They did work him in the minors last year at left field a little bit. He did okay, but he's more valuable in the infield because if you can have that stick at second, it brings more value, right? You can put almost any schmo in left field. So, I mean, if you don't believe me, Marcelo Ozuna's got a gold glove in left field.
Two words for you, Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, well, he's about like that. And, yeah. I mean, heck, Eddie Rosario last year was an absolute train wreck in left field. And, yes, somehow he was a finalist for the gold glove. That tells you how little talent is in left field defensively. That's usually where you put your stick. So I digress back to the original argument. I think it's going to be Rafi unless Pablo Reyes can start stroking it. Unless there's someone out there on the trash heap that they're going to try to bring in. That's a possibility too. But to me, Jarren Duran plays a good center field. I think Rafi's an incredible talent. This may have to be a one-year deal where he plays short, kind of like what Mookie Betts is doing in L.A.,
yeah.
Right? They ran out of shortstop, and they tried to Vaughn Grissom Gavin Lux. They tried to cram him over at short, and he's over there in spring training. I was watching his games, and I'm like, holy crap, this is bad. Like, if you had his video and Vaughn Grissom's video of defensive shortstop, the only thing missing is the clown music, you know, playing in the background. So he could be I'm not calling anyone the next Mookie Betts, that's insane, but I'm talking about being versatile, and then maybe they make a trade if they stay in it, right? If the Red Sox are in it, maybe they make a trade for a shortstop who's available out there, and then you can put Rafi back in center. I don't know.
Yeah, but how many legitimate major league shortstops are out there, though?
Well, when you start talking about, first of all, here's an idea, but the only problem is it's going to cost money, and we all know that's been a problem with the Red Sox recently.
Yeah.
One of the guys that lifted his no trade clause, it's no longer a full no trade. Now it's he would accept the trade if he liked his landing spot. It's Francisco Lindor, the New York Mets. He at one point had a no trade clause, and during the offseason he opened it up because he knows the Mets are starting to rebuild, and he knows there's a good chance they're trading Alonso at the deadline, and that the Mets probably are going to be out of it. And if all of that takes place, just get ready for the Francisco Lindor rumors. But the Red Sox have to stay in the race. And then the other thing is, he's on the hook for a long contract. He's only a few years into a contract that's over $300 million. So would they have to give top prospects to have the Mets absorb some of that money? Because the Mets have done some of that. Or would they just take on the money and not give up many prospects, which doesn't look like that's the MO of the Red Sox ownership at this point.
I mean, giving up prospects isn't the MO these days. Why do you have, is my opinion, but whatever. They still haven't asked me my opinion. I guess the Red Sox don't want.
You hold on to them because guys like Rafi are sitting in your system that the average fan hasn't watched play because you don't get eyeballs on the game. I try to watch as much minor league baseball as I can, especially when the Braves are involved, especially like if we're playing like a day game and that night I'll put on. But I can only watch so much of it, right? So you're really relying on the guys down there scouting them 24/7.
Right, but I mean, here's the thing with – and I get that side of it. I know that it's, you know, and like Myers and all those guys, they're untouchable. I get that are coming up soon. But you have to build pitching at that level. And the Sox have not done that. I mean, since who? When's the last homegrown Red Sox pitch? John Lester?
Yeah, it's funny, if you go by the Orioles model, they did the exact opposite, and I think it's worked for them. They built sticks down on the farm, right? And their theory is, well, we'll draft a bunch of pitchers. Whatever sticks against the wall is fine. But you can project a hitter much better, and there's less chance of Tommy John or UCL or whatever you want to call the surgeries nowadays. So that, and I kind of get that, because if you've got loaded sticks up and down your lineup, young guys, especially if you can lock them up, right? That's the key. If you can lock them up and get them to agree to cheaper deals, but for long term, so there's a risk on both sides. That to me is the way to build it, because I know I'm always using Atlanta as a reference, but I see them every day. If you notice, the Braves haven't locked any pitchers up except for Spencer Strider, and how'd that work out, right? That's the only pitcher they've locked up long term. Everything else that they have locked up long term has been the entire core of their everyday lineup. Because, once again, you're more likely to get an injury to a pitching arm than you are to an everyday player. Not that injuries don't happen. Trevor Story is a perfect example. But he's also an aging veteran. But if you lock up Rafi or you lock up Duran to, say, let's say, an eight-year deal, then they may be getting paid a little bit more today, but you're saving money on the back end. I think, to me, if you see something in a guy, I think it's a sound investment. But one of the things that they always talk about with these investments, with all the successful franchises, is he your type of guy? Meaning, usually what that means is, not only is the talent there, not only can you project him, and he doesn't have an injury history, but what kind of guy is he in the locker room? Is he a guy that gets along with everybody? Plus, you want someone who's self-motivated. You don't want a guy that, once he gets the money in his pocket, he goes all Pablo Sandoval on you, right?
Yeah.
You go, damn, man, you're one Eminem away from, damn, what the hell?
Got a splash of diabetes on your...
Yeah. You know, Prince Fielder comes to mind.
Yeah.
He retired because of a neck injury, but was it a neck injury, or was it the rolls on the back of his neck? Like, come on, right? And I was a Prince Fielder fan, because I'm much more likely to be confused with him walking down the street than Ronald Acuña Jr. Right? Physics is physics, baby.
Yeah.
But when you commit long term to a guy, man, I want a guy who's in great shape. And as you always say, you know, well, pairs of shape. But I'm talking about guy who's in great shape, but also just seems motivated. A guy that seems like every day wants to go out there. Guys like Austin Riley of the Braves. Guys like, and I don't follow them as much, but I get the feeling that when they locked up Julio Rodriguez out in Seattle, he was a motivated guy, right? Mm-hmm. So
I see your point. I hadn't really thought about it that way. And
is Tristan Casas a guy? Is he a guy that you want to lock up long term, or do you want to play this thing out and see how it works? Because I feel like Rafi's a guy. I feel like Duran's a guy, just because I like the athletic ones that, you know, you can lock
Rafi
up.
Well, Rafi got an extension.
What's that?
They signed Rafi to an extension.
Right. No, I get that. I'm saying, is Tristan Casas a guy? Obviously, they think Rafael Devers is a guy, because they signed him to a huge extension.
Right, and Rafaela, I mean, he's playing.
I'll tell you someone else who I think is a guy, and we were texting about him the other day. What about Tyler O'Neill? He's gotten the hell out of St. Louis. That guy's raking.
Yeah, the guy is basically the only one that is right now.
I wanted to save this story for you, because when you sent the text, I was like, it's too long to text, plus it's better on the show. Tyler O'Neill, why he's not in St. Louis is because he did not get along with their current manager. And he's already starting to wear thin. But this is what Tyler O'Neill did, and it was either a game that they played against Atlanta, or it was like the game right before they played Atlanta, because I was paying attention to the press conference. Okay. He called out Tyler O'Neill in front of the press for a base running blunder. Not a slap ass mistake. Not like, you know, he was jogging down the line on the game-ending double play, and had he ran it, you know, no. It was just a blunder on his I'm trying to remember what it was. It was something like he didn't tag up or whatever it was, but it wasn't anything egregious, and it wasn't something he's done several times. And his manager to the press in St. Louis, which we all know that's a baseball town, right?
Yeah.
Puts him on blast and says that's he's not playing Cardinal Way type of baseball or whatever, you know. I can't remember the actual term, but it was something like that. Like, that's not the Cardinals way. Something like that, that, you know, he probably just jotted down on an index card and thought it was catchy. But that's why Tyler O'Neill is in St. Louis. And it seems like to me that Tyler O'Neill goes, thank God, get me away from that jackass. Because he's not popular in that St. Louis dugout. I said this at the beginning of the season, one of the previous shows, I expect him to be the first manager fired in Major League Baseball this year. But that's why Tyler O'Neill's in Boston. And usually a change of scenery when you're not getting along with the manager or whatever, unless you're like just a constant jackass, which Tyler O'Neill doesn't come off as that. Dude, he's raking.
And, you know, Cora's not the kind of manager that's going to – he is very protective of his players and the press and everything. So Tyler O'Neill don't have to worry about that with Cora. Cora will call out, you know, ownership. But the players are calling out ownership. I don't mind that, but Cora is very protective of his players, so Tyler O'Neill is not going to have to worry about that. And
he's got 11.24 OPS, tied for fifth in Major League Baseball. He is tied for first with home runs.
Yeah.
He has six home runs. He only has seven RBIs because nobody's on base.
Right. Yeah, it's all solos. But some of those haven't landed yet. Have you seen some of the home runs?
He's jacked. He's always been jacked.
Yeah. I mean, I think it cleared the interstate past.
It would never shock me if it came out one day, hey, guess who failed their PEDs? Because he is jacked, baby. But I'm here for it. Let's go. Let's come on. Keep pumping that into your behind, because I don't care if you go to the Hall of Fame. I care about are you producing right now?
Yep. Yeah.
Not everybody can, you know, be built like Winnie the Pooh and slam the ball out of the damn stadium like Salvador Perez of the Royals. You ever seen this guy play, man? Aging catcher. He looks like it. That dude, man, I'm telling you right now, he puts a thwack on the ball. He hit one out last night that, I mean, duck, seriously, because it could be headed your way. It's insane. But, yeah, Tyler O'Neill's a guy that I would seriously think about locking up long term.
Well, it's an interesting take that, you know, if the Braves went that way and the Orioles are doing it that way, clearly that way works, because everybody that you talk to is trying to pattern themselves after the Braves model.
Right. Now, the problem is not every player wants to play that game. Some players want to do the long play. I don't know. The problem that you run into this, and this is the type of thing that I think a pitcher would think about, is, dude, you get that injury. Let's say that UCL injury happened to Max Fried and not Spencer Strider. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He's 31. Meaning his first year is almost like a throwaway, because you don't know what he's going to get. So really he's 32 on the deal. What are you going to be able to sign for? And there's already been a couple of guys. And then to top it off, let's talk about the fact that the National League Cy Young winner this year only got a two-year deal. A one-year opt-out, but a two-year deal. Jordan Montgomery, who I can make the case won the World Series for the Texas Rangers, he basically got the same thing. Because they're just – the analytics are pointing to don't sign an aging pitcher to a big contract. It never works out.
I mean, look at Verlander. I mean, prime example.
Carlos Rodon is a perfect example. He signs with the Yankees last year. I think he was 30 when he signed, but 31 by opening day. He had a terrible year. They paid him $30-plus million on the AAV. I think it was a five-year deal. So I think if memory serves me correct, it was like 5 years around 160, maybe just north of 160. Well, they've already pissed away one of the years because not only did they make the playoffs, his season was terrible. He's pitching pretty well so far this year, but I think he's a perfect example to why teams are going to be very gun-shy to give Max Fried, who, by the way, if you look at the analytics of him, like, we know following him day in and day out what kind of person he is, and he's a bulldog, and he's a competitor, and you love that in him, but he doesn't have a lot of strength, swing and miss stuff, and that's where the analytics come into play in Major League Baseball. When you talk about, like how did Garrett Cole get such a big contract is because his strikeout rate's through the roof. Max Fried, Friday night, it was considered a great performance, and it was because he gave it one earned run over six and a third. He only had four strikeouts. And in today's baseball, that's terrible.
Yeah, I kind of disagree. I think as long, because there's no shame in relying on your defense to get the outs. You don't.
That's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is today's analytics in front offices, they pay for strikeouts. They pay for OPS. They don't give a crap about your batting average. They care about your OPS, meaning on base plus slugging, because it shows that when you're hitting the ball, you're not just slapping it to left field like the way Luis Arias of the Marlins did, where he floored with 400 last year. And then by the end of the season, he was, I believe, around 350, which is great, but his slug is terrible. And I see it every time I cover one of their games. I see it because, for instance, the one hit he had last night is literally a slapper to left field, drops down for base hit. Well, he's not a stolen base threat, so it's not like when Ronald Acuña Jr. gets a single and you're like, "Yeah, that could be a triple."
Yeah, a walk.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that's not what we're talking about here. I still think they're going to come up with some kind of stat with that, but they need to come up with some kind of statistics that shows that when you the single that you get or the base hit that you get, whatever, along with what you did with your running ability per at bat, I think would be a good metric. So in other words, if you get on first and you just stand there like a thumb and the inning ends, okay, that's worth the one single. But what about the guy that goes out there, steals second, and you get him home via a broken bat single only because he was standing on second? Where does that value come in? Or what about the guy that steals second and third and you get him in on a fly ball? No one had to get a base hit. Where does that value come in?
That makes a lot of sense. And I can see the ownership would go for, because, well, he gets a lot of singles. Great. But what happens then? You know, and,
right,
you know, the only way that's going to produce is if you have nine people who are slapping it to right field. That's really the only way that is going to do you any good. You got to give credit for the guy to get on, that's getting on base, but it's if he's not circling third base ever, it's moot.
Back to Tyler O'Neill, he's going to be 30 next year, and he's unrestricted free agent. Man, I'm telling you right now, if I'm the Red Sox, I'd be aggressive right now and try to lock him up to something. Because he's a guy, what did he make this year, 5.85? It's his last year of arbitration.
Yeah, contract, but it's in that neighborhood, yeah.
And he's going to be 30. I mean, unless he hits 50 home runs, I don't think he's going to be in great demand. But he's going to be in demand. So I think you could go to Tyler Neal right now and get him to sign a 3 or 4 year deal with an AAV of around 12 per, right? So let's say it's a 4 year deal worth 50. I think he'd probably sign that, if not 4 for 60. I think he'd probably sign that. And that may sound like a lot for a guy you just got, but that's going to save you money down the road.
His contract with a zero signing bonus, 4.95 a year. Well, that's
this,
a steep.
This year, his arbitration number is a 5.85. So that's his base salary for 2024. I'm not sure what you're looking at, but his...
Well, still has him in a Cardinals uniform, so this may be a little...
Yeah, you may need to update your browser. Always go to something called Spot Track.
This salarysport.com.
Get rid of that. Spot Track is the Bible for anything. It's all sports, but anything contract related. SPOTRAC. I'll send it to you sometime. But anyways, that's what we're looking at as far as, because you can't just look at what's going on this year. You got to look at what are you building towards?
That is the million dollar Austin right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know Yoshida's not going anywhere. He still has a few years left.
By the way.
What's that?
And he's not hitting his weight, by the way.
No, and the problem with him is he's not very good defensively. I always wondered about that signing.
He's not good defensively. Yeah.
Brian Bayo, you got locked up right before the beginning of the season, which that's good news.
Yeah.
But I guess my question with, okay, you still have a couple of pre-arb years with Tristan Casas, so I don't think it's something you have to push the pedal to. He still has one more pre-arb year next year, so that means he'll make the base salary, league minimum this year was $760,000. It'll be somewhere in that neighborhood next year. Then he goes into arbitration, and you get 3 years of arbitration. That's 26, 27, and 28. At 29 is when he would be an unrestricted free agent. So my point being, if you like what you see in him this year, I would seriously think about getting aggressive and locking him up, because he's going to take a deal that's going to pay him a little more now, because he's like, dude, I'm making $760. All these other guys are making, you know, $20 million a year or whatever, right? You get to dangle that carrot, but and a first baseman's going to age well, by the way. If you like what you see, then you lock him up. Now, to me, this is a very important year. And I'm not saying you got to wait till the end of the year, but I at least want to see through the summer where he is. And if he's a guy that can prove that he can hit the breaking ball, and I know that's been an issue, but if he can prove that he can hit the breaking ball, you got a cornerstone at third that you can build around. Plus, you've already got Devers. Now, we've already talked about Rafi, right? We got him locked up. Duran, I think, would be another guy, but that's how you build it. You know, you don't do it all in one weekend. Like, they don't just go, all right, guys. Yeah.
And I think I agree with you. I think Duran is one of those. When the Red Sox have been referring to our core players, well, that's all they say. I mean, okay, yeah. Obviously, Devers is ours forever. We just signed an extension with Rafi. Okay, so apparently he's a player, but I wasn't aware of that. But Duran definitely is, and because that dude runs like he's on fire. And Casas, I think, would fall into that category. This kid Myers that's coming up soon, they think he hung the moon. If that's the direction they're going in, great. No. I bide my time and at least if I understood that was the plan, but they're not saying that's the plan. You know, they just like, oh, we're going full throttle. And then they leave Red Sox fans twisting in the wind. If they were saying, hey, if they just come out and call it what it is, We're building from the ground up. We're building something. Okay. Red Sox fans are not patient, but they will at least, you know, take a step back and be able to appreciate what is happening in Boston. But everything they've said they're going to do, they haven't done. You know, that's where the first fan comes in.
Marcelo Meyer, they've got the estimated time of arrival for him this year. Is he still on track?
I'd say the second half of the season. I have not seen him play because I haven't watched the minors. But this kid's supposed to be a franchise player from what all scouts have said. But, you know, it's one thing to do in the minors. It's another thing to do it in the major leagues. You know, I mean, I hear great things, not good things, great things, but.
So what I'm reading here is last year he struggled after a left shoulder impingement. So left shoulder injury.
Yeah.
When he fell running the bases in early May, he batted 337 before the injury, 190 afterwards, and was shut down in August. And so I would think that what they're hoping is that he shows that he can get back to form. I don't see anything, any kind of update on what he's hitting right now. But, man, if he can. So what about the idea that Rafaela holds the line at short until they're convinced Marcelo can come up and play short, and then you can slide Rafi back into the outfield?
On paper, that sounds great. I'm reading this thing about him now, and he said that...
Because I don't have anybody... The only other option that I see is a kid by the name of Nick York, who's the number six prospect. And his estimated time of arrival is this year. Plays second base. I don't see anything where he can play multiple positions. So if he can't play shortstop, then it's kind of a moot point, because I do believe that Grissom's going to be the everyday second baseman when he comes back. I kind of expect Grissom to be back by in the next 10 days. I think they'll just get him to get the cobwebs out and away we go.
Right. And, which is a good thing for the Sox, let's be honest. Grissom's good. The thing I always heard about Meyer was that's the reason Bogaerts didn't get that huge contract from the Sox, because Meyer was the heir apparent. But
Pablo Reyes, to put him at shortstop, first of all, can we talk about the fact how you could take him in a fight? He's 5'8", 175.
Pedroia walked up
and he's 30. He's 30. Betting 154. So this guy isn't like, hey man, don't worry, because he's a little lightning in a bottle. Wait till he develops. He's 30. We're still waiting for me to develop at age 50. So you know, sometimes things don't happen. Sometimes you develop bad habits and not develop anything else.
Every day I look in my mailbox for my Red Sox invitation to spring training, nothing.
Yeah, usually all you have to do is look down. If you can't see your shoes, that's why.
That's a first sign indicator. Yes, it is. Yeah.
That's why. Right.
That's one of the reasons why.
Like the first time I went to an NFL game when I was an adult, not when I was a kid, when I was an adult. And it was a preseason game. In Nashville, Titans versus Dolphins, and I'm about field level, and I see the tree trunks that are on Ricky Williams and Zach Thomas's legs, and I'm like, hey, right. That's why I'm not in the National Football League.
Yep. Again, one of the reasons. Yeah.
So they're not racist. I just suck. That's what it is.
That's my profile. Oh, that's just
I was good. Convinced they didn't want no damn Irishman in the National Football League. Then I saw, wait a minute. So, CD, he got the start last night, went 1-for-4. I'm talking about Reyes, by the way. But, man, he is, you talking about light hitting. I mean, what is his OPS right now? Good night, Irene. It's barely 500. I'm sorry, but he's got to go. The moment they figure out that Grissom can play second base, slide Rafi to short, and Reyes has got to go. Unless there's something on the trash heap that I haven't paid attention to, somebody that got released that you can bring in. But typically, you don't release good shortstops, right? You don't release the guy because, we got plenty of those. It's like left-handed pitchers. If you can breathe and you can walk and one foot after the other, you normally have a job in Major League Baseball. I mean, there's not even like – I'm thinking of like Brandon Crawford, who left the Giants for years. Where's he playing at now? I saw him the other day. And he at one point was the best defensive glove in all of baseball. But he only had like two seasons of his entire career where he had a good hitting season. But he was all in all pretty much low batting average, all that kind of stuff. Wherever he's at, and I forget where he's at now, he looks like he might have packed on some LBs between last season and this season. It happens to all of us when you hit your late 30s. That's why you don't sign shortstops in the late 30s. But anyways, let's talk about what you wanted to get into. The main thing that I think we have not – all right, first of all, let's touch on the Schilling thing. Schilling wasn't invited to the
opening
to the ceremony with Tim Wakefield. I mean, I can't imagine that he would be. That would cause more problems than solve. So what did you want to say on that? Because, I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer. You don't invite the guy who dimed out the sickness that pissed off the wife.
And the wife's sickness as well.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've always defended Schilling because of what he did in 04, but this – I didn't care about his politics or anything. This was it. I mean, I remember texting you that day. I was like, I'm done with this guy. And he was trying to be all noble about it. Oh, I don't want to be a distraction. No, you are a bad person to do that. Those kids, I mean, how do you do that to your friend and to your friend's kids? And they threw out the first pitch. And Schilling was just going, like, kind of putting himself up on the cross. I'll just step back. And he wasn't even invited.
No. Which nor should he be. I still say he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
And it's a shame because he was such an integral part of us reversing the curse. You know, the bloody
sock. It's not just that. He belongs in the Hall of Fame not because of that one season. He belongs in the Hall of Fame because of what he did in his career, especially in the postseason.
Postseason, what is he, 11-2? I mean,
you know, I don't know if people forget this, but long before he ever reversed the curse, I mean, he took down the big bad Yankees in Arizona back when they had those god-awful purple pajamas that they used to wear. And, yeah, Randy Johnson had a lot to do with it, too. But Curtis Schilling, I mean, that's the most devastating 1-2 punch I can ever remember in my lifetime.
It's up there with, like, Smoltz and Maddox or something.
They're above that. And I know they were only together for a short period of time, but you did not want to face in a short series Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling.
No, nobody did. No.
And he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't give a crap if you don't like his politics. I don't give a crap if you hurt people's feelings with the Wakefield thing, realistically, because it's got nothing to do with him being in the Hall of Fame.
No, I agree.
You invite him to after parties? Hell no, he's a jackass.
Right. You don't have to be friends with a guy, but the numbers speak. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, hands down.
And it's not like he did something like Pete Rose or Shoeless Joe Jackson where you can point to and say, that hurt the game. You can't do that. That hurt the game. No.
No.
Everything that we're talking about with Curt Schilling is post-baseball career.
And, yeah, and it just shows he's an ass, but that's not illegal.
To me, this would be the equivalent of, I'm trying to think of a current player that we just know is going to Hall of Fame. We'll say Justin Verlander. And yeah. 2 years after he's out of Major League Baseball, he gets caught knocking over a liquor store. The hell does that got to do with the fact that he was one of the greatest right-handers of his era, right? Like, you know, yeah, that makes him not a good person, but...
Was Ty Cobb?
I mean, first of all, a lot of those stories have been embellished about Cobb, the more and more that comes out about that. I don't think he was a great person, but I don't think he was like the slime that everybody portrayed Cobb to be. But it's a valid point. It's not just Ty Cobb. There's a litany of guys in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Weren't great people. There were self-absorbed jackass. First of all, being self-absorbed, a little narcissistic, that kind of was what makes you a great athlete. Because you kind of have to have that. It's me against the world. All these people are trying to stop me when no one's even thinking about you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite players of all time, and I didn't even become a fan of his until years later after listening to him and reading his books, but I hated him at the time, was Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson was a jackass. Reggie Jackson is and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And anyways, the Curt Schilling thing, I get why he wasn't invited. And nor should do I not think he should. I'm not like, oh, you should invite him. No, because what are you doing? You would be overshadowing what you're really there for.
Right.
And it's not a reunion of the 2004 championship team, right?
Right.
2004 championship team, I think that you have to invite him, and he can get booed if he wants to get booed, right?
Yeah.
But
I mean,
this was about Wakefield. The other thing before we have to jump off, I do want to make sure we cover this. The Andrew Bailey pitching program, we're talking about implementing junk instead of fastballs, throwing less fastballs. And basically what he's really doing, I did some research on it, it's not that he doesn't want you to throw fastballs. He doesn't want you to throw fastballs against guys that hit fastballs. Though that's typically what most guys hit best because, you know, the ball's straighter for obvious reasons. Even though it comes at you harder, easier to hit. And I guess there's an idea that he has of pitching backwards. So starting the at bat with the soft stuff and then maybe finishing him off with the hard stuff.
Yeah, he wants the fastball to be your out pitch, you know, where a lot of guys it's the, you know, Uncle Charlie or something. But yeah, it's a backward system, but you know, the guy I introduced you to, Maz, his theory is that puts more work on your shoulder to throw nothing. I mean, just jump, jump, jump. And he's like, our pitchers are going to get injured. That's it.
It's not just that, because what Pivetta's on the IL for the first time in his career. Well, long stint. I heard Maz say the other day he'd never been – Pivetta has been on the IL before because I followed his career before he was in Boston, but never anything of major concern. It was usually just a reset. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I worry as much about the injury as the fact. So the big picture of winning the game. If I know what you're doing, you're no longer outsmarting me. So if you go into a game and say, "Hey, we're going to throw backwards. We're going to get you on the strikes." All right, dude. Well, I'm going to sit on the soft stuff in the beginning of the count.
Yeah, you're giving
that. If I know the soft stuff is coming at the beginning of the count, it's actually easier to hit than the fastball. Because I know what your out pitch, and especially because he pretty much broadcasts the fact that he's going to go after. So let's say you have a pitcher. I'm just going to use three basic examples so we're not here all day. Let's say you have a pitcher who's three main pitchers, fastball, curveball, slider, right? And the stats come up and it says, Sarge over here can't hit the curveball. So that's probably what you're going to see at the beginning of the at-bat is the curveball. Well, Sarge can hit the curveball if he knows the damn curveball's coming. At that point, you're just wondering about location. But if you're sitting there going, all right, not much of a chance I'm getting a fastball at the beginning of this, you're going to sit dead red and try to tattoo the ball. You're not going to wait to the end of the count. Because no. then you have the upper hand.
And the only way that system works is if you know that they're starting out with the soft stuff, the only way they get you guessing then is once you get two strikes on you. Then you got to just, okay, is he going to throw the same pitch? But why give them those first two or three pitches? You know, you gave them the answers. They're going to sit there and wait on the soft stuff and dip cars in the parking lot because they're waiting on a slider or something. I didn't understand that at all. And they were just skywriting it all through spring.
And we're recording this Saturday morning where the Red Sox are 7-7 on the season, coming off a 4-game losing streak, losing 5 of their last 6, right? But let's look at the big picture. Who the hell have the Red Sox played so far except for Baltimore, which swept them? Because I'm not convinced that Seattle is this great team that everybody... Seattle, once again, is being the Mariners. They're doing the same thing they always do. A lot of hype in the preseason. They'll eventually get hot somewhere in the middle of the summer, but it'll usually be too little too late. Seattle is infamously starting off slow. So they win or split the series against Seattle, then go to Oakland.
Who's a high school.
Yes. Oakland's got some good players, but you got to put a team together.
And they have.
I mean, I watched the end of the Oakland game last night, the walk-off, just because I got sucked into the Blackburn start. And the kid that hit the walk-off, I can't remember his name, Butler or something like that. Anyways, literally a kid. They were dousing Gatorade and stuff on him, and he was doing woo-hoo! Like, you know, like a little kid. Literally, man, this kid. I don't know how old he is, but if I was to guess, I knew one thing. I'd damn sure be carding him. And I'd probably be questioning whether or not he's old enough for a driver's license. He looked that young. So that's who Oakland is. The Angels win 2 out of 3 in L.A., then lose the first one to – now, first of all, Detmers is a good pitcher, so that was just that's a tough matchup. But my point is – Bailey's system isn't working, because if it was, you'd have more wins. First of all, you'd have taken at least one against Baltimore. What was it? It was a 5-0 lead in game 2.
We lost the game in the last couple of innings twice against Baltimore.
And in the first game,
we lost it by about
the second inning.
Was Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah.
Hit a solo home run.
And that was Bayo Day. You expect to compete on Bayo Day, but he went up against their ace, Corbin Burns, and you saw a big difference between what an ace is.
Hey, Bayo pitched a decent game, though. Now, he's not Corbin Burns. Nobody's expecting.
And the thing about Brian Bayo is, especially with the lockup that we were talking about on the last show, you know, locking him up, it's because he can be a solid 2 or 3 his entire career. I'm not convinced he's an ace.
He's not.
But if you can pay a decent amount of cheese to a guy on a long-term deal to be your 2, your 3, I think a 3 on a championship caliber team. There's no shame in that game.
No.
But if you have him out there throwing benders every 75% of the time, he's probably going to get Tommy John and the rest will be history. And, oh, by the way, his ERA is going to be 9.75 because Bailey's jackass is basically – you might as well put it on the Jumbotron while the batters are about – hey, you're going to get a curveball. You don't know which side of the plate you're going to get. But
unless you're Mariano Rivera, which everybody knew.
Just a lightning bolt from God that was thrown into his shoulder and said, throw this the rest of the way. You'll be in the Hall of Fame. We'll see you.
Yeah, we're going to just dress God up as Mariano and put you on the mound.
Oh, by the way, Curt Schilling beat Mariano. Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But looking at the upcoming, I'm totally with the whole I've been listening to a couple of Sox shows to kind of get me, you know, caught up to speed every time. And by the way, Maz, I like what he does. The only thing that sucks about it is a little dated because it's right before the game and all that kind of stuff, and he doesn't give you big picture. But all in all, it's a good show. The Locked On, oof. Locked On Red Sox, I'm not locked on that. Mm-hmm. I'm stiff-arming that. And I'll tell you one thing, that whole Locked On, you know, because it's a whole community, it is swing or miss, y'all. It is swing or miss. So you go into and you pick a team, realize it's not guaranteed that that's the best one out there.
It's not. That we struck out with the Red Sox Locked On. It's bad.
I'm not going to sit here and put down certain ones, but the ones that I can tell you that are good Locked On. So I'm not going to put down others because it's not fair. They're not here to defend themselves. What I found was the Giants actually have a good Locked On. The Reds have a good Locked On, but a lot of them are terrible. A lot of them are just snore fests. But anyways, yeah, Bailey, man, I can't get on board with broadcasting what you're going to do. Like, we shouldn't even know that, right? We should know their game plan.
No, I'm in Ohio. How do I know the pitching plan for the Red Sox?
Jesus Christ. There's a thing just came across. This is football related, but the receiver for the Chiefs, Rashee Rice, involved in an 8-car pileup created by him racing 119 miles an hour. I don't know where it was, but.
Wow.
Play stupid games, get stupid prizes. Anyways, that had nothing to do with baseball, but I just saw it flash across the screen. Like, 119 miles an hour.
Oof. Man, where are you going? Hurry. Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah.
McDonald's stopped serving breakfast like a half an hour
Man, he better hope that everybody lived in that thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because there's a couple, and I don't know if anything was, they didn't flash up whether or not it was intoxicated. Usually 119 miles an hour. I mean, unless it's, you know, the booger sugar, it's not a, that's just someone who's a speed junkie.
Yeah.
But looking at the upcoming week, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, but the upcoming week, they've got the Angels and they got Cleveland at home, and look, Cleveland is Cleveland, but the next six games, I feel like they got to win four. To keep their head above water.
Yeah.
Which means close out the Angels series and split the Cleveland series. They've only announced two of the starters for the Cleveland series, which is Tanner Bibee, who's a tough customer. He'll pitch on Monday. And Carrasco, who is a shell of his former self, pitches on Thursday. That's a Thursday afternoon game, April 18th. That game you got to get the win.
Right, but these seem like tall orders, and they shouldn't.
No, they shouldn't be, but on the next four starts, you got Bayo, Crawford, Whitlock, and Hawk. Hawk, blah. But I like what I've seen out of Cutter Crawford.
Yeah.
And I like Whitlock. It's not their fault. The bullpen stinks. The bullpen just stinks. But once again, if you quit broadcasting what you're going to throw, I don't know of any other team, Major League Baseball, that tells you their strategy. I don't understand why this is even knowledge.
I don't have an answer for you.
Do you know when people first picked up on it? I mean, did he get quoted in a did he hold a press conference and say, hey, guys?
Well, I believe in spring training, if I understood it correctly, kind of like that. There was like a new strategy, and this is what we're going to be doing. You know, a lot of it became, okay, we're going to look to see, are they fastball hitters? And if so, we're just not going to send them a fastball. And then it kind of, how did you get these other pitches? Well, Bailey said, you know, he's got us implementing, he's teaching us new pitches, so it's basically going backwards. It just kind of grew and grew. And eventually, these are major league hitters. You know, they figured it out. And now it's the worst case since, you know, Manny was on PEDs.
Well, assuming that you're available to do this in 2 weeks on the 27th, does that work for you?
I might be in Rome.
Italy?
Yeah.
Well, then let's not do it then. That seems like a bad idea.
I got to see the date on that, what day that is. I think we leave the 27th. We're going to Rome and Iceland and all these places.
It's 2 weeks from today. So it's Saturday. So,
no. Yes, I will be in town for that. It's the end of May when we're going to Rome. So.
Okay, this is April I'm talking about.
Yeah, I forgot what month it was. Sorry.
Okay. So we can plan on doing this. Actually, let me get to you off air about this. We might be able to squeeze one in before then. I got to look at my work schedule. But I'd like to do this more often than once every 2 weeks. It depends on my work schedule. But looking at the next couple of weeks, look, this homestand has got to be a winning homestand, because after that, it's off to Pittsburgh, who's been playing incredible baseball. I don't know how long it'll last because they've got a bunch of kids there, so they'll usually hit a wall, and then off to Cleveland again. And then they come home. Red Sox are at home against the Cubs and Giants to finish off the month. And I do believe to have a fighting chance at the playoffs, you need to have a winning April in Boston, because the rest of the schedule is going to be so damn difficult, especially when, is it June that I looked at? Late June's pretty brutal.
Well, you know the saying, you can't win a World Series in April, but you can lose one.
And right before you get to the All-Star break, you do have a chance to right the ship a little bit, because in the last, like, 12 games, you play the Marlins, you play Oakland, and they do finish up with Kansas City, who's playing well right now. But there's also a trip in there with the Yankees. But there's going to be an opportunity in the next couple of weeks. It really is a good litmus test, because, look, the rest of this week at home against the Angels, home against Cleveland, I think bare minimum, you got to split that, which would make you 6 games. So if you split that, you're talking about being
10-10.
4-3 of your last 7 heading out on the road trip.
And we got to win at Fenway. We have Fenway,
especially
this year,
against the damn Angels. Angels suck.
Right?
Angels are bad.
So are we, apparently.
What is your walk-off? We got to jam out of here.
All right. It was great seeing Kimbrel back and Fenway, but he's got to lose that top knot.
That guy's been dead to me for about 10 years, ever since we traded him and he first came back. He started already getting, like, what, classic Kimbrel in Atlanta was clean shaven and almost had a buzz cut. And he went out to San Diego, and then everywhere else he's been, he's got, you know, I think he's living in a van down by the river is what's going on with that guy.
But, yeah. He's got a skirt made of wheat or something going on. I don't know, man, but I saw him and I was, who is, I know him. Oh my God, it's Cardiac Kimbrel with a top knot. It's like he's auditioning for Game of Thrones or something. What are you doing, man?
Well, he's getting hit so hard, maybe he's thinking about identifying and going and playing softball or something.
Well, he's not getting hit against us.
Hi-oh!
Yeah.
That's my walk-off is, we'll see y'all next time. Red Sox Country Radio. We're here. We're going to try to be here a little more often than once every 2 Saturdays. We're going to try to make it, in a perfect world, right around, you know, 1-2 every 10 days. But we'll see what happens. And look, got to win the series against the Angels. You just got to. 4:10 first pitch today, 1:35 on Sunday. And then Monday is one of my favorite days. I didn't even grow up a Red Sox fan, but it's Patriots Day.
Yep.
11:10 first pitch. So, unfortunately, I'll be at work during that, but I'm sure I'll have an earbud jammed in somewhere and listening to the game, as I always do. And then I do a lot of, huh? Were you talking to me?
They love that.
All right, here is the new Red Sox Country outro. Hope y'all enjoy.
The ninth, 5-1 Red Sox. Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship. And the Red Sox become the first team in the 21st century with four World Championships. Can you believe it?